This is episode 356 with multiple-time Kona Ironman qualifier, coach, physical therapist, and author, Chris Johnson. Welcome to the Strength Running Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Jason Fitzgerald, and my singular goal is to help you improve your running by getting stronger, racing faster, preventing more injuries, and achieving more of your goals. I'm a former cross-country and track and field athlete for Connecticut College, a columnist for Trail Runner magazine, a 239 marathoner, and at one time, a proud steeplechaser. You can learn more about me and strength running at strengthrunning.com. And I could not continue this show without the support of our partners. I hope you'll take advantage of the discounts that they're offering. We're supported by one of my favorite strength and performance tools, the Mobo Board. Go to moboboard.com and use code STRENGTHRUN10 to save 10% on your board. Invented by renowned physical therapist Jay DeSherry, Mobo helps you stabilize your stance with an innovative rocker board that's set up on these two fins. And there's a hole where your four little toes are supposed to be, which effectively forces you to drive your big toe into the board to improve your stability. Now, I mentioned this before, but I was a little arrogant going into my first session on the Mobo board. How hard can it be to balance, right? Well, I was humbled pretty quickly. Even if you're a good runner, better balance, stability, and proprioception are all going to help you have a more powerful stride and prevent more running injuries. You'll learn how to improve the efficiency of the kinetic chain from your hip to your big toe. Because as Jay likes to say, it's not just how strong you are, but how well you use that strength. Save 10% with code STRENGTHRUN10 at checkout at moboboard.com. Again, that's code STRENGTHRUN10 at moboboard.com. A big thanks to 2Before. Get yourself a whopping 30% discount on their 20-pack and multi-packs at 2before.com for their all-natural, scientifically proven pre-workout with code JASON. 2Before, which is the numeral 2 followed by the word before, is made from New Zealand blackcurrant berries, which improves vasodilation or blood flow, just like beetroot. But they also improve recovery after exercise by managing oxidative stress through their unique ratio of antioxidants, which also have a nice side benefit of supporting your immune system. Now, the main antioxidant is called anthocyanin, which I hadn't heard of before, but is actually more present in New Zealand blackcurrant berries than tart cherries, raspberries, blackberries, or blueberries. Plus, 2Before tastes delicious. I love products that are both good for your performance and good for your overall health. Get yourself 30% off any multi-pack with code JASON at 2before.com. They have a caffeinated and non-caffeinated version, which is great depending on your caffeine tolerance. Me, I love having the caffeinated version with 120 milligrams of caffeine in place of coffee before my morning runs, especially if I'm in a rush and I don't have time to brew a pot of coffee. Go to numeral 2before.com with code JASON for 30% off your order of any multi-pack. My guest today is a titan in the running world as a physical therapist and thought leader. Chris Johnson is an author, coach, speaker, and entrepreneur who helps runners and triathletes perform better and stay healthy. Just last year, I took a workshop on running injuries led by Chris, as well as Jay DeSherry, who's also been here on the podcast. Chris's knowledge about movement, running form, and how to build injury resilience is world-class. And today, we're talking specifically about arguably the most important aspect of your running form, the mid-stance. This is when your body weight is being fully supported on just one leg. If you have any kind of weaknesses, imbalances, or poor movement patterns, this is the part of the gait cycle that's going to show it. We're going to talk a lot more about what happens during this part of your stride, how to strengthen the supporting muscles, common problems with runners who don't have good mid-stances, movement snacks, and more. By the way, if you're interested in running form, download my 3 favorite form cues at strengthrunning.com/cues. I'll show you how to use simple verbal cues to tighten up your form, become more efficient, and improve your technique. And now, without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Chris Johnson. So Chris Johnson returns. It has been actually a little over 4 years since the last time you were on the podcast. So it's been a little bit late getting you back on. But you know what? We did get to spend some time almost a year ago together at your workshop in Boulder, refining the running rehab journey. So it was very nice to see you there.
Well, I appreciate you having me back on, and Jay and I appreciate you taking that course. That was a fun group, and Build was nice enough to open their doors, and I think everyone came away having learned a bunch, and upbeat experience.
And you know what? I just had fellow attendee Matthew Silver on the podcast last week, so thanks for bringing good people together. That was fun.
You're up to good work, man. You're busy. You're a busy dude.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you were laughing at me a little bit at your workshop, being the only running coach there. I think there were 29 physical therapists, one chiropractor, and then me, the running coach. So you were probably giggling in the corner as a lot of the technical stuff flew over my head. But it was really great just to kind of be in that world for a couple days and really immerse myself.
Well, I applaud you for putting yourself out there. I think that course has a lot more salience to coaches than people realize, especially when Jay and I teach it, because we sort of work across the injury to performance spectrum, and we interact with a lot of coaches and even do some coaching ourselves, more than people probably realize. So, no, I hope you came away with a wealth of information. But yeah, we enjoyed having you.
Yeah. And you know what? We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things I came away from when we talk a little bit more about movement snacks later in the podcast. But, you know, first, Chris, let me just say, like, you are just such an absolute wealth of knowledge on movement, how to build injury resilience, performance. But there is a topic that I would really love to go into more detail with you on today, because it does seem just to be getting a lot more airtime lately, and that is the importance of being strong in mid-stance. So when we start, maybe can you give us just a basic definition of what mid-stance is and how it fits into the entire gait cycle?
Yes. And it's funny. I was talking to Jay DeSherry last night, and he wrote a paper in 2010 that I would encourage any of your listeners to check out, basically talking from lab to clinic and understanding the gait, walking and running. So I think the easiest way to break this down is there's weight acceptance, which is initial contact and the loading response. Then there's single limb support, which is what we'll be focusing on if we're talking about mid-stance, which is mid-stance, terminal swing, and pre-swing. And then limb advancement. And I'm actually glad that we're getting on this topic, because I tell most of the clinicians, coaches, runners that I work with that, you know, with distance running, it's generally a stance phase problem, right? And I think that's really important. Sprinting, different beast. We'll see a lot of hamstring tears or strains at terminal swing. So, but with distance running, I mean, I just focus so much of my time and energy from a rehab standpoint and helping people to prepare for the performance demands and the forces associated with stance, especially mid-stance, because that's when the forces are greatest. I'll leave you with a soundbite. I was talking with Jay last night, and we got on this topic, you know, because I glanced at the questions. You asked me if I looked at the questions. I said no, but I like when I glanced at it, I saw the term mid-stance, and I asked Jay for a soundbite, and he said, "Put your attention where the action happens," you know, and that's why we put such an emphasis on mid-stance.
So that's where the action happens. What is the action? Why is this phase of the gait cycle so important? Why are we focusing on it so much? You did mention that forces are at their highest at this phase of the cycle. So maybe you can talk a little bit about, like, what's happening during mid-stance, which is giving us this cause for our focus on it.
Yeah. So I think it would be helpful to backpedal a little bit, because I think that in terms of the research that we got a little bit distracted, not to say that some of this research doesn't have salience, but if we think of the vertical ground reaction force, and if you just type that term in and pull up images online, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So, but it looks like a chef's mitt. Okay. So you know, Irene Davis and Daniel Lieberman, I almost said Huberman, Daniel Lieberman used to talk a lot about, you know, the impact peak and loading rate. And that was sort of the thumb of that chef's mint. I think that was a little bit of a distraction in hindsight, because people would say, oh, if you see this bump, that, you know, maybe that's a problem. We see this in rear foot strikers. It seems to be absent in mid to fore foot strikers. But there are things that you can do. I could show you how to eliminate that in the initial impact peak through a rear foot strike just by quieting my foot down. Cadence can impact that, but it's really the second peak, or the active peak, where the forces are greatest, right? Where we're having to deal with 2.5 times body weight on average. And that can be a function of which tissues we're looking at, as well as running speed. But if that's where the forces are greatest, that's where we should be really concentrating our efforts and making sure that these tissues have the capacity, and that we also respect the rhythm and timing associated with that. So, so if you look at a lot of the exercises that I post, you'll see that they often reflect where we are in mid stance. So, you know, if you look at the knee, you're at roughly 20 to 45 degrees. Let's just say about like 30 degrees of knee flexion. You're also in ankle dorsiflexion. So yeah, hopefully that paints the picture a little bit.
Well, it seems very important, because you're dealing with the highest forces that you're going to experience when you're out there running. And if you can't handle or manage those forces well at their peak, there's obviously going to be some breakdown in your form. What are some of the typical problems or examples of breakdown or inefficient movement patterns, however you might term that? What are some of the common things that you see if someone has an issue with their mid stance, if things aren't working properly?
Yeah, I mean, you may see a stiffening strategy at the knee. You may see poor control of femoral rotation. I think that you can also see some aberrant mechanics at the lumbopelvic hip complex. Those are the main things that jump out at me if I'm doing a running gait analysis, or if I'm just taking someone through a battery of physical performance tests. I think people, you know, obviously when we talk about stance, the glute med invariably comes up. So we can get into that. But those are the main things that I see in terms of problems with mid stance.
It seems to me that when a runner is engaged in mid stance, most of their leg musculature, especially in the upper leg, is engaged. And so it's really a test of how well all of your muscles are working together in concert with one another to support your body through this high load, high force part of the cycle. So in my mind, a lot can go wrong in this scenario. And some of the problems that you've described, you know, can lead to some of the things I think runners are a little bit more familiar with. You know, I think every runner has heard of hip drop, where maybe the glute med isn't fully engaged and the hip is sagging in that mid stance position instead of being fully supported. And I'm glad you brought up the glute med, because this is something that is often one of, you know, every runner's biggest problem areas. It seems like it's often just not doing its job properly, potentially maybe because of our sedentary lifestyle. What role does the glute med play in controlling mid stance, and how does a runner know if they might have an issue with this muscle? Because it almost seems like every runner kind of does.
Yeah. So I think we have to take a step back and look at the anatomy of the glute med. And there's been some researchers who've done some incredible work. You know, the people that come to mind are Adam Simkew straight away. So he's out of the group at La Trobe University. And he and his team have spearheaded a lot of that. And there's plenty of other researchers. But I think to start with, just knowing that the glute med is a monoarticular muscle. It has a big physiologic cross-sectional area. I'm pulling on cobwebs here, but I think that like 60% of the hip abductor musculature is basically the glutamine, right? So it's having to contend with really high torque, and it basically is positioned to deal with the initial load. So we talked about loading response. You see a burst of activity in the glutamine during the initial 5 to 10% of stance. So it's really trying to work with controlling that pelvis and providing hip stability. Now, I think people have this notion that you don't want any pelvic drop or contralateral pelvic drop. You are going to get that. That pelvis is not going to stay perfectly level. So when you land, you'll get some pelvic drop, you get some hip adduction, you get lumbar side bending towards that side. So, you know, when we talk about mid stance, I think the glute med is really helping you set the stage to get into mid stance properly. And I've seen plenty of my old sparring partner in New York, Stephen Day, who's, you know, one of the, you know, grittiest and most competitive athletes. I think he's racing 50 to 54. He has gnarly pelvic drop and he runs fast as hell. You know, so I think you have to be careful of just seeing aberrant mechanics and starting to jump to conclusions. So, you know, this is an orchestra in terms of how all these muscles work in a cooperative manner. But I think that this really got put on our radar because of Brian Noren's research, who basically was the first to show prospectively that hip adduction was a risk factor for women who went on to develop patellofemoral pain. You know, so I think that's how we really started zooming in on this. But you look at some of Rich Willey's work. I mean, he did a paper, I think it was JOSPT 2011, that showed it's not quite as simple as just, hey, you strengthen the hip abductors and external rotators, and that's going to improve your running mechanics. He showed that it didn't, right? He showed that it improved single leg squat mechanics, but it lends to this notion that running is a hierarchical skill. So I think we have to be very careful of, yeah, glute med important, just like, yeah, soleus is important, but that's not the whole picture, right?
I need to take a step back and ask you about your sparring partner. I'm just having visions of Chris Johnson in a boxing ring beating someone up with gloves on. What kind of sparring do you mean there?
Oh, just triathlon. So, yeah, we were both he still is a long course triathlete. I'm a recovering long course triathlete who's really focusing on running. But he and I were, you know, he always nudged me out in some of the races that we went head-to-head, but Stephen was a gifted runner. He's a British dude, which means he always complains, but always seems to show up when it matters. No, but I have some footage that I'll try and dig up and share with you. And I had this I was talking over a clip of him running, giving this very rosy explanation when I was this young punk, overconfident clinician. And man, I keep these videos up just to remind myself that, you know, I've evolved as a clinician in my thought process, but I'll send it to you. You'll find it fascinating.
Well, thanks for that. I think I had to correct the image I had in my head of two little endurance athletes fighting each other in a ring.
Yeah.
as much as that made me laugh. So, okay, we're understanding that this mid-stance position is so very important. A lot can go wrong here. It's a symphony of many muscles working together to orchestrate this movement. How do we train it? Because it seems like isolating individual muscles isn't the whole picture. Of course, if there's, you know, a significant weakness, that's probably a good idea to get your muscles at some baseline level of strength. But is this an issue of training movements, not muscles? And how do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to see a lot of issues in working with runners among women, especially 40 to 60, which is, you know, these are folks coming in oftentimes with gluteal tendinopathy or glute med tendinopathy. I think that in terms of challenging runners, especially to prepare them for the demands of stance and mid stance in particular. Some of my go-to exercises, I mean, when you look at the research, there's some seminal papers from Mike Raymond, who's just brilliant. He's had invaluable contributions to the field. Collins et al. Did a nice paper, and then Damian Moore, who's part of Adam Simkiw's group. You know, in the, I would say the one common denominator among all these papers is when you get someone upright onto one leg and you get them doing some type of squatting maneuver, that seems to really challenge the glute med and all three portions of it. So there's an anterior, middle, and a posterior branch that are all supplied by the superior gluteal nerve. So, you know, I think that if we're going to challenge it, like a single leg squat would probably be very helpful. Now, from some of the videos, I think that you alluded to that Instagram post that I did talking about mid stance. I love to start with just simple band resisted toe tap. So heavy cloth band positioned around the distal thigh, where you have about 30 degrees of knee flexion. You're advancing the shin over the foot, so you're getting into mid stance and you're having to control that lumbopelvic hip complex. My goal though is if people have a squat rack and or a Smith machine is to get them under barbell. So now they're having to contend with greater degrees of axial load and greater forces. So if you just think of a toe tap, if you have a visual of that, you're just doing that under a barbell, right? In getting up to gnarly weight, I always show this to runners and they're looking at me like, holy shit, like this, that's a lot of weight. I'm like, yeah, well, you're having to deal with a lot of forces when you're running. I mean, we were saying mid stance is, you know, on average about 2.5 times body weight. So, you know, I'll get people up with a barbell toe tap to 1.5 times body weight. Like that's a goal for most of the runners and triathletes that I consult. If you have a Smith machine, you take balance out of the equation so you can really, you know, concentrate the load. And I also love doing some drop lands where I'm going in like a double leg calf raise in a Smith machine. This would be a late stage exercise. And I'm dropping and rapidly catching that in single leg stance, which is basically preparing you for mid stance, not only dealing with the forces, but the rate of loading. Right.
Chris, can I stop you for just a quick second? You said that was a late stage exercise. Do you mean by that that this is a more advanced exercise that we're going to build to by doing a lot some other foundational exercises first?
Yeah. So I would want someone to first be able to tolerate just a barbell toe tap. You know, prove to me that you can manage the load before we start introducing a higher rate of loading. You know, and that is something that's very important with running because, you know, short ground contact times, we're looking for less than 250 milliseconds. So, yeah, I mean, even if I'm working with someone who's not presenting with pain or pathology that I'm working with from a coaching standpoint, I would still want them to prove tolerance to like barbell toe taps or mid stance isometrics in a Smith machine before we start doing those drop catches. And I can send you videos of this to include so people have very clear visuals because these are not trivial exercises. And you also have to be cognizant of where you're plugging those in. Not only if someone's in a rehab program, but if they're actively training, where are you introducing those exercises and how does that interface with their running schedule? And that's an art as much as a science.
Do you have any guidelines on when this work is best scheduled? And maybe we can separate that for, you know, the runner who's healthy and wants to complete this work because they want to stay healthy. Maybe they have a history of some of these injuries, but they're not currently dealing with it right now. And then there's the runner who is currently dealing with, you know, some sort of injury. Is there a different way of incorporating this kind of work into a schedule depending on who you are?
Yeah. And I really think it's like, you know, you have to delineate between someone who is basically in rehab, maybe recovering from a glute med tendinopathy or a glute med tear versus someone who's actively training, who's not presenting with any complaints. So if we start with the latter, the reason I love something like a barbell toe tap or a Smith machine isometric is because with the running gait, it's not, and I definitely got this wrong during the early part of my career, it's not these muscles lengthening and shortening in length. You're basically dealing with high contraction intensity in a quasi-isometric state. I mean, same thing goes with the glute med. I think if you do get to a point where the muscles are actually lengthening and shortening, it probably is, you know, a function of overstriding. You know, so now the other thing with isometric training that that I find helpful is that people generally recover very fast, right? So that's important to me because if I'm working with a competitive runner, as much as to the extent people realize this, I mean, the elites that I work with, they're running generally 6 to 9 times a week. You know, so you have to be very calculated with how you're getting them to do the strength training, because if you tip the scales and you create any sort of residual soreness or leave them under recovered, they're going to be wary of the programming, right? So I find that you can get into these high contraction states or intensities while it also not dumping into the next run. With rehab, I mean, the goal is to really systematically restore capacity in the lateral hip musculature. So if you look at the Dorn study that is often quoted, I think it was a Journal of Experimental Biology 2012, you know, the glute med is dealing with roughly 2.6 to 3.5 times body weight. And that's a function of speed, right? So we need to just think of, okay, where is this person? Which means you have to test them. You have to assess it, right? So you can do things like, you know, a rear foot elevated split squat to try and anchor where someone is. I'll look at a side plank with the top leg lifted just to see if someone's willingness to load through the outer hip. That creates really high contraction intensity. I think it's 103 or 13% of max voluntary contraction. So you just want to first say, hey, what's point A, right? And then from there, start to nudge people. Maybe you start them with, maybe if they're really irritable, you're starting them with something as simple as a clamshell. Maybe that morphs into side-lying hip abduction. But the goal, again, is to get that runner eventually upright onto one leg. So that's where the program has to ultimately evolve or morph into.
A quick break to thank our partner, the Mobo Board. Go to moboboard.com and use code STRENGTHRUN10 to save 10% on your board. Now, if you're injury prone or you just want to stay healthy, the Mobo Board is your new best friend. It was created by physical therapist and author Jade Sherry, and this training tool helps you stabilize your stance, improve your stability, and reinforce better movement patterns. Stronger runners experience less wear and tear on their joints, so let's get strong and then use that strength the right way. Get yours at moboboard.com and don't forget code STRENGTHRUN10. It'll save you 10%. Just a quick break to thank our partner Tubefor, a powerful sports supplement made from New Zealand black currants designed to increase endurance, manage inflammation, support immunity, and promote adaptation. Tubefor helps boost performance by increasing blood flow, making it more efficient for the body to pump oxygenated, nutrient-rich blood into the muscles. Boost your performance before your next big workout and support your immune system with Tubefor's high antioxidant pre-workout. Use code Jason for 30% off their 20-pack and multi-serve packs at tubefor.com. Chris, let me ask you a somewhat selfish question about an issue that I deal with in my running. And I think it's somewhat common that a lot of runners deal with. My left glute med doesn't really seem to want to work properly. And this is an old injury that I've had for a long time, probably did not fully treat it and kept training on it. And so now it's a little bit more ingrained. And whenever I attempt to do some of this single leg work, I feel like I have so much instability. I lack balance that I don't feel like I'm ever doing the movement 100% properly because I'm compensating, you know, I'm moving around too much. There's too much, you know, lateral knee movement. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm thinking about that old line, don't build fitness on top of dysfunction, right? Like, is there anything wrong with trying to do these exercises and knowing that the mechanics of it aren't 100% there? And if there is something wrong with that, where should someone like me start? Is it like you were talking about previously with, okay, we're going to do clamshells, then we're going to do something a little bit more advanced, and then you're finally going to build up to those more advanced weighted single leg exercises that does challenge your balance.
Yeah. Now I would be looking at things head to toe with you. I mean, so you took the course. I would definitely be taking you through that table test just to see if there's any dysfunction distally that may be negatively impacting things upstream. I think that you could do something like an open chain exercise, such as sideline hip abduction or a clamshell, but I would be taking you to stand, again, getting you upright onto one leg straight away. I would probably be looking to introduce a cloth band-resisted toe tap. So getting a heavy cloth booty band or like the Tribe or Serious Steel bands are great. I would be taking you to that right away. So long as there weren't any, patterns of stiffness or mechanical blocks that were negatively impacting your movement quality. And I would also be looking like, how well do you get your head over your foot? So if we look at balance, and you're saying, oh, I feel a little bit, wobbly on one leg for ease of explanation. I see this a lot of times with people who don't translate their head over their foot during stance, if that makes sense. From an exercise prescription standpoint, I would be looking to get you doing those band-resisted toe taps out of the gates. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to tolerate that. And then to eventually work you up to a barbell toe tap. And there'd be some other exercises. We could give you something like a farmer march. I think that would have salience to your situation. I would be very deliberate trying to get you upright and challenging you from a single leg closed chain standpoint.
Is this a scenario where we're having a clinician with you, watching you, kind of looking at your movement patterns is really beneficial? Because I feel like just having you next to me would allay a lot of my fears, even if I had the same exact prescription of exercises that I could do at home. It's like the psychological safety of having a PT who's very knowledgeable telling you you're doing it right. Let's just make this small adjustment, that kind of thing. It seems like that's really important in this kind of a situation when a runner is dealing with not just the physical ailment that's bothering them, but also sort of the emotional, mental, psychological baggage that comes with it.
I think it can be a double-edged sword. I think sometimes, being in the context of a clinician that you know and trust is one thing, but I think sometimes clinicians overcomplicate things and they're too quick to try and cue and tinker with someone's movement. I mean, if I gave you that band-resistant toe tap, I'd say, hey, look, Jason, here's this exercise. This is why it's important. And this is what it looks like, so let me give you a model of performance and I want you to have a practice. I'm going to go get a glass of water, use a restroom, even though I may not need to, because I want you to practice that drill. I want you to sense how you perform it on the left leg versus the right leg. And then I may come back 5 minutes later and say, hey, relax those toes. I want you to get a little bit more of a hip hinge. So we're biasing it towards a lateral hip. Have another practice. Your goal is to do the motion again, now with less effort, relaxed breathing, no gripping. Just dropping some simple cues and realizing that it doesn't need to be perfect as long as you understand why we're doing the exercise and what constitutes success and where people trick out or compensate, where the exercise, we're no longer squeezing everything we can out of the exercise.
This reminds me of a part of the course that you offered last year, which was sort of not over coaching, this idea of just getting out of your client's way and letting them figure some things out by themselves. Because if, like you said, over cueing can be something that, I don't think a lot of people think about this from a PT's perspective, but from a coach, you can certainly over coach. You can certainly just be too hands-on. You're the helicopter coach of the coaching world. But this is an important part of physical therapy because ultimately you're not going to be in the physical therapy's office all the time. You're going to be out there in the real world doing some of these movements and doing your sport, and you have to have the confidence that you're moving correctly yourself.
Yeah, and I think we all have signatures to the way we move when we're doing certain tasks. So you know, I think that it's very easy to have an idealistic notion of how someone should move. I mean, I think that the question is, what's the stimulus or the adaptation that we're going for? And as long as we're basically doing something to address that or work towards it, that's the goal. You know, so like with that band resisted toe tap, I'll just stand up here a little bit. You know, one of the things is people will tend to, when they tap out to the side, they want to rotate their body. So I may just say, hey, Jason, this looks good. Let's have you try and do this, where you just take this hand, and that way I just impose a simple constraint. So if I just have you go here, now you can't rotate away. So I've given you a very simple constraint that's going to ensure you're squeezing a little bit more out of that exercise. And when I say squeezing, I don't mean squeezing the glute. Like, I'm making sure that there's no way for you to cheat the exercise at that point.
Yeah, I love ways that you can almost cheat-proof an exercise by very simple cues, and it really forces you into the right positions. Now, I know we're talking a lot about exercises. You have so many phenomenal demonstrations that I'm going to link to in the show notes, so folks should definitely check out the show notes for those resources. Let's talk a little bit on a related topic that we mentioned earlier, which is these movement snacks. You're a big fan of just incorporating some basic movements throughout the day. You know, this is hardly quote unquote formal training. It's probably separate from your formal training session that you probably did in the morning or in the afternoon, however your schedule might be. And a lot of these movements are sort of like what we've been discussing, but maybe without the weight. You know, you're just practicing the movement itself in an unweighted way. Can you go over a couple of your favorite movement snacks, especially those that might stress that mid-stance position like we've been discussing?
Yeah. So, you know, I want to always pay credit where it's due. So Ben Cormack at Core Kinetic was the one who introduced that term to me. And he's a brilliant clinician. You know, he's been in the clinic for a number of years. He's on top of the literature. So, you know, give him a follow if you want to learn more. But so I follow a Pomodoro method. And what I've noticed is that I feel very sluggish. And I know that I'm not alone in saying this, but you know, if I just sit at my desk for extended periods of time, I feel sluggish when I go to train. So I also feel like I'm no longer productive after, like, you know, 45 to 60 minutes. You know, I need to get up and move, which is why I can never plug into a corporate setting. I get fired within the first week.
You and me both, my friend.
Yeah, for sure. So I basically follow a Pomodoro technique, which involves working in a 25-minute block, and then I take a 5-minute break. During that 5-minute break, if you were a fly on the wall in my garage, you would see me doing the flow rope, which is basically priming the lumbopelvic hip. It's one of the ultimate priming activities for running, for walking, for locomotion. So I'll take a 5-minute break, and I may just swing the rope for 2.5 minutes. You may see me doing a marched overhead reach. You may see me doing a march with a dowel rod overhead. You may see me doing some of those dowel rod mobilizations that I've been posting on Instagram lately. So, you know, it's basically these frequent movements throughout the day that are going to put you in a better position when you go to run. And people can challenge me on this. I mean, there's not any, you know, groundbreaking research that, you know, talks about the role of movement snacks and how that's going to make you a better runner. But I think that our bodies are designed to move, you know, and sitting's not the devil, but if you're sitting for 9-10 hours a day, yeah, let's get you up, get you moving. So I've been weaving these in, and I think that presenting it in that manner really resonates with my patients and clients. Like, they're like, I love that concept of movement snacks. And I think that they find when they do start incorporating this into their workflow, that they feel more productive, their body feels better, and they're getting more out of the training sessions. Now, this is all anecdotal, but when you hear people report this enough, you start to say, hey, there's probably something to this. So yeah, you could do any number of things, though. You could do a push-up isometric, you could do the band-resisted toe taps, but I tend to think when I'm going through drills, there's movement stacks that I'm just doing randomly throughout the day. And then there's like the main course, which could be, squatting, deadlifting, farmer marches, bigger exercises, bigger movements. So that's how I tend to conceptualize and also incorporate it into my programming and exercise prescription for people.
I'm glad you said that, there's not a lot of groundbreaking research on this because, on the one hand, I'm with you that I think these kinds of activities are transformative if you're not doing them, if you are sitting for a long time and you're just not moving very much throughout the day, especially if you're someone who runs, say, after work, 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the evening hours, and, you just spend 8 or 9 hours sitting down at a desk. But on the other hand, there's really no research to support that idea. It's just sort of all this, well, I've experienced it. My athletes have experienced it. I talked to smart people like Chris Johnson and he says it's true. So, it's one of these things where the anecdotal experience of it is just so powerful. But at the same time, there's really no evidence to suggest that it's beneficial in any kind of profound way. And I'm just curious, how do you then justify it? And I guess now you're putting on your coach's hat because you're very often citing studies, which I think is fantastic, but often coaches have to do things that aren't fully supported by the literature. And that's part of the art of coaching, right?
Yeah. And I would say that, there is research. There's a paper that if you pull up PubMed and just type in movement or exercise snacks, and how they have the potential to improve cardiometabolic health. I mean, there is data on this stuff. It's just not really presented in the context of how this is going to improve your running. I mean, it's going to improve your health and wellness if you're taking breaks, So I sort of, present it as such to say, there's research on just basically the role of getting up and moving, whether that's the ultimate movement snack, let's be honest, is go out for a 10 to 15 minute walk. Right. But I think challenging runners through some of the drills that we talked about does seem to have transference and carryover to their running.
And when runners are doing this kind of work, what's the main goal? A lot of runners don't think they're doing anything unless their heart rate gets up. This isn't that kind of work, is it? We're not lifting weight. We're not getting some sort of aerobic benefit. It's just, is it slow and controlled movement and really refining how your body moves in certain ways? What's exactly your thought process on, what you're getting out of some of this kind of work?
A lot of it, as it relates to running is, without using too much fancy terminology, is single leg postural stability drills. So that's sort of the whole idea behind the marching. I think the flow rope, you start getting into some lumbopelvic mechanics, really teaching people to get head over foot, which I think is really important for running. All you need to do is look at Calvin Kiptum, rest in peace, to understand the importance of head over foot during single leg tasks. So I'm not sure if that answers your question though.
Yeah, no, I think it helps just with better understanding sort of the reason. I've a lot of my athletes, they want to know why they're doing certain things. And so now I can say, practicing any kind of work on your one leg, because running is a single leg activity, is going to enhance the robustness of your ability to be in that position. And I think mid stance is probably the most difficult part of the single leg stance. And that sort of ties everything into what we've been discussing, right? It's, it's not only a movement that you have to be good at, but then you also have to be able to withstand the forces that you're going to experience within that movement. And that's where the strength part of it comes in.
Yeah. And I think it's strength, it's fatigue resistance, it's, rhythm, timing, fluidity, smoothness, it's all of that. And I also think something that's often misunderstood too, is sometimes people see, I may be getting a little bit off topic here, but sometimes people see aberrant mechanics during mid stance where they're like, oh, this person, has dynamic knee valgus, or they're not controlling rotation. I think you also have to really understand that runner's ankle dorsiflexion. You know, it is this someone who just has stiff ankles? Is that their structure or their anatomy? You know, that could definitely be the case with masters level athletes. So I think that you have to really understand this from various angles.
Chris, does that mean we probably should not spend all of our time over diagnosing what we consider to be movement inefficiencies and instead just focus on being efficient at that movement, getting strong, practicing the movements themselves? Because I fully agree with you. You know, you can look at pictures or video of elite runners on the track or racing a marathon, and the pronation and some of the internal rotation of the knee is so profound. And, you know, you have all these, you know, Twitter coaches saying that they should fix this stuff and they'd be better if, you know, they weren't pronating so much. But at the same time, this is the way that they move. And at the speeds that they're running, these forces are going to be even higher. So they may even cause even more pronation or some of that rotation.
Yeah, I think that it's largely unhelpful to try and make sense of what you're seeing from a snapshot if you don't know that runner, you haven't formally evaluated them, because you're going to be relying on a number of assumptions, which generally will make you wrong, right? So if you see someone who's running fast with all these aberrant mechanics, you have to say, for whatever reason, it's working for them. You know, so I'd mentioned Calvin Kiptum, and people, you know, would say, oh, he has too much medial lateral movement. People would say the same thing about Usain Bolt. And I'm thinking, why don't you beat these guys in a race? And then you can start telling me their mechanics are off. You know, maybe most runners need more of that medial lateral movement. Maybe that's a problem, right? So, but yeah, people do this with Lionel Sanders too. You know, they're like, oh, you could do X, Y, and Z. I'm like, have you ever evaluated Lionel Sanders? You have no clue what you're seeing, you know? So yeah, I'm always very, very reluctant to try and cherry pick anything.
Well, thanks, Chris. I enjoyed learning more about mid-stance, and I think this is helping runners better understand sort of every phase of the gait cycle and where in the gait cycle they need to be strong and to have a lot of competence in. And so by incorporating some of these movement snacks, drills, exercises that you talked about, again, I'm going to link to a lot of those things in the show notes so folks can check it out. Is there anything I might have missed about mid-stance or this general topic that you'd like to add that, you know, I think would add maybe a little extra flavor?
Nothing that jumps out. I mean, I would say that the main thing that's just worth mentioning is people far under load. You know, most of the runners who consult me from a physical therapy standpoint, when they present and I say, it seems like you're spinning your wheels, what have you been doing? What's your current program? They're far under loading, you know. Or they become very enamored with single leg drills, which again, I think obviously is important for running, but, you know, I think a combination of double leg and single leg drills is generally important for someone's program. I think the main thing is to challenge people and to make sure they have the capacity to handle the demands of mid stance. And if you have a program that is far under loading someone, it's not going to cut it. That person will get exposed. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, whether it's teaching or on podcasts, I mean, people are always, you know, for whatever reason, putting a lot of stock in the hip musculature when we're talking about mid stance. And I'm thinking, don't forget the quads. Like, the quads are working 4 to 6 times body weight. I've never seen someone who's a really like successful, robust runner who doesn't have incredible quad strength, you know? So again, back to this whole notion, this is a symphony, right? It's not, you know, Frankenstein where we're trying to parse out certain muscles. Yeah, sure. If someone's coming off of a glute med tendinopathy, load the tissue with the issue, but also understands that this has to plug into the kinetic chain, you know? So, the quads, very important during mid stance.
Load the tissue with the issue. Another quotable, Chris. I love it.
Yeah. Well, those are the L's of loading, right? So anytime designing a program, It started out as three. Now it's five, just because I'm finding more words that begin with the letter L. So localized loading. All right. So the L's of loading, anytime I'm putting together a program for someone, it has to generally check these boxes. So number one, load the tissue with the issue or localized loading. Number two, give someone a life movement, push, pull, hinge, squat, carry, right? Three, linkage, get someone doing something that's challenging the kinetic chain. That could be a step up, an exercise that pertains to locomotion. That could be something like the flow rope, walking forward and backward. And then the fifth L is let or love. Let people do an exercise they love. Everyone has an exercise they're sort of enamored by or they love to do. So yeah, that's sort of the framework for crafting a home exercise program for someone that comes in.
So helpful, Chris. Thank you so much. If folks want to check out what you're working on, follow, you know, some of your exploits in physical therapy, I know your Instagram is probably one of the best places to see visually some of the exercises that we've talked about. But is there anywhere else folks can learn more about you?
Yeah, my newsletter is hands down the best place. I mean, I have a YouTube channel that I haven't posted anything in a while. It's funny when people always reference it because, you know, to me, it's sort of like collecting dust or cobwebs. But I write a monthly newsletter. I spend a lot of time on it. That's where I really get into my musings, my thoughts, and expand upon some of the things that you may see me posting on Instagram. But yeah, I mean, my goal with my Instagram account is to just give a lens into me playing with movement, some of the things that I tend to prioritize in working with runners. But I also want those to be presented as like a vignette. You can look at it 30 seconds, you know, where it's never a waste of your time. And I try to really talk about application, you know, some of the research that may drive what I'm talking about or showing you. So, this is all fun. And I'll tell you what, the shit just gets weirder as I get older. And apologies for cursing. I was looking at, you know, my last few videos and I also love, like, when I hear certain songs, I think of very specific movements. So I try to just create this very cerebral experience for people. And, I love when I get comments, like there's a fellow, Cameron Yuen, who works in New York City, friend of a friend. And he's like, that last dowel rod walk that you did, he's like, my spine just feels better watching that. And when I hear stuff like that, I'm like, hell yeah. So my goal is to just get people thinking about this stuff, give them good models of performance. Because I think if you watch someone who's moving in a smooth, fluid manner, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, there could be some pain, but you know, I think that watching someone move like that is very therapeutic in its own right. So hopefully they serve as a good resource for people. Play with them, be sensible. And I would encourage everyone to get a flow rope and start. If you're a runner, like that's a missing link if you're not doing it.
I have never heard of a flow rope until today, but you know I'm going to be looking into it now. Chris, thanks so much for being here and your expertise. Guys, check out the show notes for links to Chris's stuff. It'll change your running. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks again for having me, Jason. Keep up the good work. You're someone I have deep respect for, and you're a humble dude, and it's always fun catching up.
I appreciate that, Chris. Thank you. What an episode. Thank you so much for listening and being part of our community here. If you're getting value from the Strength Running Podcast, if the show has helped your running or made you rethink how you approach your training, please consider leaving a review or a rating in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Those reviews are incredibly impactful and helpful for this small business. If you have questions about your running, feel free to email me at support@strengthrunning.com, or you can search our website at strengthrunning.com. For more digestible tips, videos, memes, and more, follow me on Instagram at JasonFitz1. We'll be in touch.